Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
If there are intelligent beings on other planets, it throws up a number of problems. Will they be friendly? Might they want to enslave us all? But most importantly, how would we communicate with them? If they exist, they may have already picked up radio broadcasts from Earth, but to their ears, if they have ears, it might sound like garbled noise. Daniel Oberhaus is the author of Extraterrestrial Languages. Daniel, good afternoon to you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Apart from the kind of, you know, let's send laser beams into space type ideas that people used to have, mathematics seems to be the basis of the way we might communicate with extraterrestrials.
Yeah, that's right. There's a long history of kind of looking at mathematics as the language of the universe. So if you're trying to communicate with something that you know nothing about, such as an extraterrestrial, the thinking has kind of been that basic math is probably a great place to start.
And why is that?
Ever since, I guess, mathematics existed, you look at all these ancient civilizations that used it to describe the natural world. What a Nobel laureate once said, this unreasonable effectiveness of mathematics at describing the universe. We still don't really know why calculus, for instance, is so good at describing the things we see around us. But assuming that the laws of physics are the same in another portion of the galaxy, and we have no reason to think that they aren't, these extraterrestrials are presumably familiar with our physics as well, and will likely have, developed their own mathematical systems to describe the natural world. So it might be a great basis of common understanding between us.
Now, and in the 1960s, someone did try to devise a language along this fashion called Linkos. Tell us about who it was who devised that and what it consisted of.
Sure. So that was developed by a man named Hans Freudenthal, who was a pretty renowned mathematician in his own right in a pretty esoteric field of algebraic topology, which I won't get into because it's extremely boring. But when he wasn't teaching at the university in the Netherlands, he was spending a lot of time thinking about how to communicate with aliens. I'm not entirely sure why he didn't write much about his motive, but after a few years of working on this, he came up with a language, as you had mentioned, called Lingua Cosmica. And that was kind of the first time that anyone had tried to formalize this idea of creating an artificial language specifically for interstellar communication. And, you know, as you had previously mentioned, it was based on basic mathematics, but Freudenthal believed that by building on this simple foundation, you could actually begin to discuss much more complex and abstract topics such as, you know, love or death or, you know, activities that are going on Earth. I'm a bit skeptical that he succeeded, but it was definitely, you know, a very, very clever step in that direction.
Now, and I suppose part of this process would be we're sending you a radio signal that consists of something, but we're also trying to teach you what this particular radio signal, what it means. So what was that process?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the hard part of distinguishing this is thinking about, we're not really teaching aliens math, because if they can build a radio telescope to receive our signal, they presumably know how to, you know, add and subtract. But what we are teaching them is our numerals and how we encode information and meaning into symbols. So when we use a computer, for instance, if I type a letter A, that's actually an 8-byte string of ones and zeros, and it's based on an ASCII standard that we developed decades ago. But an alien probably doesn't have the same standards as us, so we need to figure out how to teach them that, you know, this string of ones and zeros, these eight ones and zeros equals A, these other eight ones and zeros equal B, and so on. Or, you know, the equivalent for a dedicated language like Lingua Cosmica or some of the others that have been developed over the years.
And so his hope was that here's the fundamentals of our mathematics. Here's numbers. We think this number is greater than that number, and 2 + 2 = 4, etc. How does that develop into complex communication, though?
That's a great question. And, you know, I don't think he really solved it that well. His idea was basically you start with math. And you give examples. So instead of giving formal definitions, formal logical definitions of, say, addition or something, you would just give a lot of examples by showing, you know, one pulse then you would do another little pulse that represents, say, a plus sign, and then you do another pulse that equals one, and then another pulse that equals an equal sign, and then you would do two pulses, and that would presumably give them an example of 1 + 1 = 2. And so after you introduce these basic concepts from arithmetic, you can then start introducing things like units of measurement, mass, length, durations of time, and so on. The tricky part is when you make the jump from basic facts of science to facts about life on Earth. And so his book that he presented the Lingua Cosmica in was actually just supposed to be the first of two editions. The later edition, he was going to get into all the complex stuff, like what it means to be a human based on this language. He never really got into that. The closest he got was doing these little morality plays, is what he called them, where you would introduce symbols that represented characters, and they would have really basic conversations about whether a fact is true or false. And I think from there he was going to flesh out this larger system, but he never got around to it. And as far as I can tell, he kind of just lost interest in the project in his later years.
Now, and obviously he's not been the only scientist who's thought about this. And you do relate in the book this extraordinary meeting, this was during the Cold War, of scientists from both sides of the Iron Curtain finally getting together to discuss this. And Carl Sagan was chairing it.
Yes, that was a very big deal. It was at an observatory in Armenia, and this was the first time that American and Soviet scientists had kind of gotten together to discuss the problems of communicating with ET. And yeah, all the big, scientific luminaries from both sides of the curtain were there. There was Carl Sagan, as you had mentioned, but there was also people you might not expect, such as one of the attendees I was very interested in. His name is Marvin Minsky, and he's generally known as the father of artificial intelligence, which, you might wonder, why is this guy who's working on AI sitting in this room for trying to figure out how to talk to aliens? But for Minsky, he saw a lot of similarities between trying to recreate artificial intelligence on Earth and communicating with an extraterrestrial intelligence. So you had all these really brilliant minds in a room discussing this problem from their particular mode of expertise, which ranged from biology to computer science.
And was it at that meeting that someone suggested exploding a load of nuclear weapons on the far side of the moon?
Yes, John Elliott, who actually he later discovered the rings of Uranus, he kind of ran this thought experiment. He's like, well, we both of our countries have a lot of nuclear weapons. What if we just sent them all to the moon, blew them up at once, and directed that energy towards a star? And that would kind of, signal to any aliens that might be there that were there. And, they ran the math. It could work, kind of. But, it's not really that practical. You only have one shot. And, at the time, not really, no one was really interested in giving up their nuclear arsenal to say hi to aliens.
Yeah, I would imagine I'll also send the wrong message to the aliens, really, for exploding a load of bombs. There's still, though, the fundamental problem, or is there, Daniel, that if we were to communicate with aliens, we have to send them a radio signal that might take hundreds or thousands of years to reach them, and vice versa. Has anyone thought of a way around that?
I think if we do find a way around it, because radio and light, they both travel at the speed of light, so it's as fast as we can get. But the distances we're talking about are so huge. So we don't really have a way around that quite yet. And, perhaps future, discoveries in physics or technological developments might help us find a way to obviate that. I'm thinking about things such as, dark matter, dark energy. Maybe that is a communication medium. But, personally, I'm not that concerned about it. I actually think that the fact that this project of communicating with ET makes us think on intergenerational timescales is a very valuable part of it. We might want to be able to have a conversation with aliens in our own lifetime, but if we're forced to think on a multi-generational timescale, I think that has a lot of ancillary benefits as well.
Daniel, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That's Daniel Oberhaus there, the author of Extraterrestrial Languages.